All right, let's dive in. Today, we are looking at Davis v. Brooke, a case I'm sure many of our listeners have come across in their property law studies. It's a, you know, a bit of a head scratcher.
It is. And a classic example of how property law can get really, really complicated.
Yeah, and especially when we start talking about easements, which is what this case is all about. Like, who can use what land and how and all that.
Absolutely. And it's not just about the present. We're talking about rights and obligations that can stretch back for, you know, decades, even centuries sometimes. And that's where things can get tricky.
Right, because circumstances change. People's needs and priorities change. And the law has to try and find a way to balance all of that.
Exactly. Davis v. Brooke is a great example of that kind of balancing act. It really highlights how courts try to grapple with those competing interests. The stability of property rights versus the need for flexibility as times change. And in this case, we're specifically looking at Maine's approach to these issues.
So let's start with the basics. For those who might need a refresher, what exactly is an easement?
Sure. In the simplest terms, an easement is a legal right that allows one property owner to use a specific part of another person's land for a particular purpose. Think of it like having a designated path or a right-of-way across your neighbor's yard to get to something, maybe a road, a shoreline, utilities, whatever it might be.
Right, like the classic driveway example, right? If you have to drive across your neighbor's property to get to your own garage, you have an easement for that.
Precisely. And in these situations, you always have two key players, the dominant estate and the servient estate. The dominant estate is the one that benefits from the easement. They have the right to use the other person's land. So in our driveway example, that would be your property because you're the one driving across. The servient estate, on the other hand, is the property that is burdened by the easement. They own the land, but someone else has the right to use a part of it.
So in our driveway situation, the neighbor with the driveway is the servient estate.
Exactly. And in Davis v. Brooke, we're dealing with what's called an appurtenant easement. This means that the easement is attached to the land itself, not to a specific person. So when the property is sold, the easement goes with it. It's a right that runs with the land.
Gotcha. So it's not like a personal agreement between two people. It's a legal right tied to the property itself.
Precisely. And that's why it's so crucial for these property rights to remain stable and predictable.
Right. So why is it so important that these rights are stable and predictable? I mean, what's the big deal if an easement changes a little bit?
Well, imagine you buy a property, and one of the big selling points is that you have this guaranteed access to a public road or a vital resource, like a shared well via a well-established easement. Now, what happens if the owner of the land your easement crosses suddenly decides to move that access point? Maybe they make it less convenient, or maybe they make it practically unusable.
That would be a huge problem.
Absolutely. It throws everything into chaos. It devalues your property. It creates uncertainty and potentially leads to endless disputes. This stability is crucial for the entire real estate market. It ensures that property ownership means something concrete and reliable.
Okay, so that brings us to the heart of our deep dive into Davis v. Brooke. The big question we're trying to answer is this. Can the owner of the land burdened by the easement, the servient estate, unilaterally decide to move an existing right-of-way easement without getting the okay from the person who benefits from it, the dominant estate? And we're focusing specifically on how Maine's courts view this issue.
Right. And Davis v. Brooke is the perfect case to illustrate this principle. It involves a long-standing easement in Georgetown, Maine. The Davises and another individual, Mrs. Campbell, owned a property that benefited from an easement across Mary Brooke's land.
So the Davises and Ms. Campbell, they're the dominant estate in this scenario, and Ms. Brooke is the servient estate.
Correct. Now, this wasn't some new arrangement. This right-of-way had been in continuous use since 1896. We're talking well over a century.
Wow. So, like, a very well-established easement, then.
Absolutely. And this easement wasn't just some minor thing. It provided the Davises and Ms. Campbell with access to both a public road and the seashore. So it was pretty essential to their use and enjoyment of their property. And because it had been used in the same location for so long, it was considered a fixed easement. Its location was clearly defined and settled.
Okay, so we have this long history, this fixed easement. What exactly led to the lawsuit? What were the issues that the court had to sort out?
Well, two main things happened. First, the Davises and Ms. Campbell wanted to make some improvements to the easement. They were having problems with flooding due to water runoff, so they wanted to pave a portion of the easement to fix that.
Sounds reasonable. I mean, if you have a right to use a path, you should be able to make it functional, right?
You would think so, but it's not always that simple. The second issue, and this is the one that's really at the heart of the case, is that Mary Bruck, the owner of the Servient estate, wanted to relocate part of the easement.
Why did she want to do that?
Her main reason was safety. The easement ran pretty close to her home, and she was concerned about that. Now, it's important to note that she was willing to pay for all the costs of building a new path for the easement.
So she wasn't trying to, like, completely cut off their access or anything?
No, not at all. In fact, her argument was that the new location would still provide the Davises and Miss Campbell with the same access they had before, just in a slightly different spot.
Okay, so Brooke's thinking is, I want to make this safer for me, I'm willing to pay for it, and it won't really inconvenience them. What happened when this all went to court?
So initially, the trial court actually sided with the Davises and Miss Campbell. They denied Brooke's request to move the easement. However, Brooke came back with a revised relocation proposal, and this time, the trial court approved it.
So round one to the Dominant estate, round two to the Servient estate.
You got it. Of course, the Davises and Miss Campbell weren't happy with this outcome. After all, they hadn't agreed to the relocation, so they appealed the decision, and it went up to the Maine Supreme Judicial Court.
All right, so now we're at the highest court in Maine, and they have to grapple with this question of whether the owner of the land, burdened by an easement, can unilaterally decide to relocate it. And remember, this is a fixed easement, meaning its location was very well defined and established.
Exactly. That's the crux of the matter.
And what did the Maine Supreme Judicial Court decide?
They sided with the Davises. They reversed the trial court's decision and ruled that Mary Bruck did not have the right to relocate the easement without the consent of the Davises and Mrs. Campbell.
Wow, so a pretty decisive victory for the Dominant estate.
It was. And this ruling is significant because it reinforces a key principle in Maine property law. Once an easement's location is expressly defined, either in the original deed or through a long history of use, as we had in this case, the owner of the Servient estate can't just move it around on their own whim. They need the agreement of the person who benefits from the easement.
So it's not enough for the Servient estate to say, hey, I'll pay for it, it'll be fine. They actually need permission to make any changes.
Exactly. And the court had some very specific reasons for taking this stance. First, they looked at the original deed from 1896. And that deed was completely silent on the issue of relocation. It didn't say anything about whether the owner of the Servient estate could move the easement in the future.
So basically, the original agreement didn't even contemplate the possibility of the easement being moved.
Right. And the court interpreted that silence as evidence that the intention of all parties involved was to create a fixed and permanent location for the easement.
Makes sense. If they wanted to allow for relocation, they would have put it in writing back then.
That's the court's logic. And this leads to their second main point, which is the importance of certainty and predictability in property law. The court argued that allowing landowners to unilaterally change established easements would create a lot of instability in property rights. If you buy a property that relies on an easement for access or some other purpose, you need to be able to trust that that easement is going to stay put.
Otherwise, it's kind of like the rug could be pulled out from under you at any time.
Exactly. It undermines the whole concept of secure property ownership. And the court also pointed out some policy concerns with allowing unilateral relocation. One of these was the potential for what they called an economic windfall for the Servient owner.
What do they mean by that?
Well, think about it. When Mary Bruck bought her property, the easement was already there. It was a pre-existing condition. And that likely affected the price she paid for the property. She probably got it at a lower price because there was an easement on it. So if she could then move the easement to a less desirable location for the Davises and potentially increase her property value, she'd basically be getting a double benefit.
So she'd be profiting from the easement twice. Once when she bought the property at a lower price, and again if she could move the easement and increase the value.
Precisely. And the court didn't like that idea. They felt it was unfair to the Dominant estate. And they also worried about the potential for harassment. If Servient landowners could move easements at will, even if they offered to pay for it, they could essentially use that power to pressure the Dominant estate. They could keep proposing relocations, maybe each one a little bit worse, until the Dominant estate finally caves just to get them to stop.
Yeah, I can see how that could be a problem. So beyond the specific issue of the pathway itself, were there any other concerns about the potential impact of relocation on the Davises and Mrs. Campbell's property?
Yeah, although the case was mainly focused on the right-of-way itself, the court's reasoning did touch upon the broader potential impact of relocation. And remember, there was that separate dispute about access to a natural spring on Brooke's property. Even though the relocation question was legally distinct from the spring access issue, the court's stance emphasized that moving the easement could potentially affect other features or resources that were tied to that easement. It's not just about the path. It's about all the rights and uses that are connected to it.
So it was important to protect the Davises and Ms. Campbell's existing rights, even if those rights went beyond just walking along a certain path.
Exactly. And in the end, the court's decision in Davis v. Brook really solidifies Maine's approach to fixed easements. It tells us that unless there's a clear agreement to the contrary, or the original deed specifically allows for relocation, a fixed easement is going to stay put.
So no moving easements around without everyone's permission.
Pretty much. And this ruling also highlights the importance of careful drafting when it comes to easements. If you're creating an easement, you need to be crystal clear about its location and any potential for future changes. Any ambiguity can lead to these kinds of disputes down the line.
So for all of our listeners out there who are future legal eagles, what's the big lesson to take away from Davis v. Brook?
I would say the key takeaway is this. When it comes to fixed easements in Maine, they mean what they say. Fixed means fixed. The location is set unless both the dominant estate and the servient estate agree to change it, or the original deed explicitly allows for relocation. And this really underscores the need for due diligence and careful drafting in easement agreements. You want to avoid any surprises or disputes down the road, so you need to be very specific and clear about what you're agreeing to right from the start.
Great advice. Always dot your I's and cross your T's, especially when it comes to property law. Okay, so as we wrap up our deep dives into Davis v. Brook, here's something for everyone to ponder. We've seen how Maine takes a pretty strict approach to fixed easements. They prioritize stability and predictability. But in a world where land use needs and circumstances can change dramatically over time, like we saw in this case where the easement had been in place for over a century, are there any potential drawbacks to this rigid approach? Is there maybe a case to be made for a more flexible standard in certain situations? It's definitely something to think about. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. We'll see you next time.